You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. Since 2009, HRN podcasts have been exploring the wide world of food, beverage, and agriculture. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by 818 Tequila, delicious and smooth tequila, meaning harmony with the earth. 818 Tequila, imported by 818 Spirits, Manhasset, New York. 40% alcohol by volume. Drink responsibly.
I'm Allison Kane, and welcome to In the Sauce, a podcast about building consumer brands from the ground up. I love doing this show because I get to interview everyone from production gurus to marketing and social media mavens, anyone who can guide me on this crazy journey. This is the story of building Haven's Kitchen sauces, but it's also the story of every growing brand because we're all in the sauce.
Today, we're going to do something a little different. I decided to invite Courtney on. She's our brand director at Haven's Kitchen. A lot of you know her from listening to podcasts where Courtney stepped in and hosted on my behalf. And we've been talking a lot lately about something feeling a little different or something feeling like it unlocked. And I thought this would be a good time to sort of do a Haven's Kitchen check-in in a way, because we haven't on the show in a while. It's been a lot of other guests, and I thought it'd be really fun. So welcome, Courtney.
Hi, Allie. Thanks for having me today. This is very fun, and I'm very excited.
So everybody, just so you all can picture this, we are in the same office in different rooms because I don't know how to do the podcast from the same room. We both have headphones on. We're on Zencastr for the podcast, but we're also on a Zoom, which is muted, so we can see each other because we are visual communicators.
Yep. We should record the Zoom while we're recording the podcast, just so that we can look back and like match our faces with our words.
Exactly. Because if it wasn't muted, then maybe we could use this as some sort of content, but we can't because it's muted.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure we could piece something together. We could make it work.
Yeah, Ashley
probably We always do. Yeah, if anybody can do it, it's exactly. Our team.
So I want to talk a little bit about, first I want to talk a little bit about this feeling that both you and I are having after 4 years of working together, 4 years of like bushwhacking our way through this business and making stuff happen.
Yeah.
I kind of want to talk about what you think the inflection point is or was, what you think has kind of unlocked for us. I think there are probably some things that are Haven's Kitchen specific. I also think that there are a few things outside of us that are worth talking about that maybe feel like they've given us some tailwinds. I also want to talk about, I posted part of my user guide on LinkedIn last week. And then the second part after sort of a lot of engagement. So for those of you who don't follow me on LinkedIn, I try not to put quotes and, you know, memes and stuff, but hopefully I do put things that are somewhat helpful. And a user guide is something we'll talk about that I actually got from a guest on the show a couple of years ago that we've put into place. But I thought it might be helpful for people out there to hear a real discussion between a founder and a, you know, head of brand, basically, after years of working together.
Yeah, I mean, you're one of the longer relationships that I've had in my life, besides my now husband and my therapist.
I mean, I feel really good about that.
Yeah, you know, I still like you, and I love working with you.
Yay.
So, you know, I feel like that's a huge accomplishment, and I feel like I'm really fortunate to still be, you know, in a position with you where we get to build something really cool and have been able to see it grow from something really tiny and cute to something like kind of almost massive and really, really impressive in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, I feel the same way, you know, we'll get there. We'll get there. Then I start like crying.
Yeah. So, oh my God. Not this early on in the podcast.
Go on.
The unlocking you mentioned, like something happened in the last few months. And I feel like we were like actively in the figuring out, unpacking those feelings for a really long time. We were like, something's about to happen. Something's happening. So, but what is it? Do you know what it is? And like, is it this? Is it, you know, the new whatever? Is it this new channel we're trying out? You know, like, I feel like over the last couple of months, we knew we were in the middle of something really cool. And all of a sudden, everything has started to feel really clear. And I think it's a couple of different things. I'm interested to hear what you think might be the big
thing. I mean, I think most likely what's going to happen is I'm going to probably think macro trends and you're probably going to talk internal. And that's probably a good way for us to almost frame it.
Yeah.
I think I personally feel like the team is in the best position we've ever been in. I think that's part of what you're going to say too. But I think also what has given me the agita, honestly, over the last couple of years, where you see me go from like confident to like, what the hell are we doing? And how am I going to answer XYZ or talk to XYZ or respond to XYZ? I think now there's some things happening in the zeitgeist that are supporting our theses, right? We always said we're a wholesale business. We're not a direct-to-consumer business. Now, all of a sudden, we look like that was very prescient, you know? And somehow, you know, we didn't even know what the unit economics were. We just knew it really didn't seem to work. And it wasn't the way we were going to get into homes across America. And so I feel, for me at least, the pressure to be something that inherently we can't be has been removed. I think also there's a respect now on that same tack for businesses that have really, really good, fundamentally strong wholesale businesses in the natural channel, which is primarily where we are, where we haven't forced ourselves to, I mean, by the way, not for lack of trying, right? I mean, like, you know, like,
if we're ahead of our time. Like,
I would have loved to be in six regions of Albertsons by now, but the truth is it probably wouldn't have been great for us.
Mm-hmm.
And I think now there's a different level of sort of respect for, we are cranking in Whole Foods, we're cranking in Sprouts, we're doing really well in a couple of the more progressive conventional accounts. But had we either pushed ourselves or gotten quote unquote lucky, or, you know, had we opened more doors sooner and that top line would have been bigger sooner, which was stressful mm-hmm. for me.
Yeah.
I am not sure that we would have as strong and steady of a business as we do with as strong of a foundation to build on and scale on now, because we've gotten a lot of things sorted out. And we kept thinking, well, we did the natural channel. Now it's time for the next thing. But like, actually, it's a 3 to 4 year thing. And I feel like the pressure around me for that double every year, triple, you know, grow that top line. There's starting to be a reckoning with that. And I feel like that makes people look at this business with like a newfound respect.
Yeah.
So that helps me.
Yeah. And I can also see a shift in your overall energy as that pressure has been taken off of your shoulders and as you kind of come out the other end of that. And I think also something that, you know, I think we all have to remind ourselves is that we have been in unprecedented times since 2020. And if 2021 and in 2022, we're looking at what happened in these last 2 years and we try to comp over it, or we try to replicate it, or we try to do better.
Double.
And anything that we did to support that growth or whatever happened in the business, it is absolutely obsolete because the world is different. The consumer changed dramatically in March of 2020. And then they were forced to change again in 2021. Yep. And now we're finding ourselves, and I include myself in it because I talk to you about myself as a consumer all the time.
Well, you know, you are
our target consumer. We're finding ourselves in a position where we have to change again. And now we're looking at 2023. Like, we're going to be in this little bit of these unprecedented times, quote unquote. We're going to be in it for a minute because our generation.
I believe I'm your mother's age. Actually.
You are my mother.
that's great.
My mother is still 21.
Yeah, she's a very youthful woman.
Yes, I am older than her at this point. But, you know, like, my generation has never seen anything like this before. And so we're going to still be figuring it out for a while. But I think back to, like, how you've seen or you're feeling that pressure off of you. I think there are a lot of different components to that. I think as your team, we're a small team. We're very intuitive and we have a very, I think, deep connection, all of us, which is a little bit of a double-edged sword because that means we can motivate each other and we are engaged with each other in a way that I've never experienced. But also, if one of us feels a little twirly or feels a little out of whack, we all feel it.
Yep.
And when you are getting that pressure, when you're coming out of these really tough conversations, double, why aren't you hitting this? Why are you not blah, blah? You come out of it and you're asking all of these questions and you're wondering why, and you start to feel the lack of confidence. And then we start to, it's like that trickle down effect.
Yeah, for sure. I've seen it happen. You know, I've seen it happen. At this point, I can get outside of it and watch it as it's happening, which we'll get to with the user guide. And I can't necessarily stop it, but I can alert you guys that I'm aware of it, which is probably, 80% of the battle.
Oh my God, yes. But also, I think what I've learned, I think around end of 2020, I started to realize, oh, okay, she's not, my conversations when I would like come home to Alex, my now husband, and talk about work, it went from, wow, Allie's having a week to, I don't know where this is coming from, to, oh, I think Allie's having some tough conversations because I can feel her getting a certain way. I can feel her getting anxious. So what I've learned to do is like, okay, Courtney, why aren't we doing demos? My response to you is like, oh, that's a an interesting, train of thought. Where is this coming from? What are you thinking? Right. And you and I have learned, I think, to have these conversations about, okay, who are you having a conversation with? Then that allows me to understand where you're coming from so that I can be like, okay, can I have a conversation with this person? Or should, let me dig into it and understand where your pressure is coming from. And then we can evaluate together. Is this like a really good thing for us for the business? Or is this, something that, we just should investigate, keep keep a pulse on it because we have to, and then, come back to it in 6 months. And I think we've learned how to navigate that really well.
Yeah.
So I think like that's one component. As like the leader who is steering the ship, you recognize you have that power, and I think you handle it really gracefully. And then I think it's us having, I think internally over the last 6 months, we've made some really great
hires.
Adjustments to the team and new hires. Yeah. And both on the marketing team and outside of the marketing team, I like to laugh about this story because if I don't laugh about it, it makes me want to cry. Those like 4 weeks you and I were the sales team.
Yeah, that was a doozy. We were launching Sprouts and Albertsons, and we had brokers emailing us, and literally I was like, I don't know what this email says. There were questions in it that I literally were like, I've never not been able to understand. It was like they were speaking.
They were
Martian language.
Yeah.
Literally.
They were speaking another language.
Yeah.
And I remember like the two of us being on a sales call and this lovely individual explaining, all right, Allie Courtney, you're going to get these 12 emails a day.
Oh my God.
They're automated with 17 Excel spreadsheets and you're going to open and you're going to filter them. And I remember and I could see it in your face, Allie. You looked like you were on the verge. You might've been crying at that point.
Probably
I don't remember.
Was, yes.
But I remember being like, all right, you know, lovely person explaining this to us. Will the business crumble if we
yes.
don't look at these spreadsheets for
you
3 weeks?
Is anything going to actually, are we going to fail if we don't open those emails? And she said, I don't think so. And we were like, okay, good.
Okay. Because it was either figure out those spreadsheets or or dedicate that time to making a hire for sales. And and I think we were like each other's gut check and we talked each other off of the ledge when we needed to. And we made these really great hires. And we have an incredibly capable sales team internally that now on the marketing side of things, I don't have to worry about our points of distribution or like getting back to this buyer and like deciphering what an IO, like, I don't know what an IO, I can't even spell IOOI. Like, what is this? Like on the op side, I'm not worried. Like, I'm not like crossing my fingers, you know, the both of, you know, we're not crossing our fingers hoping that, you know, ops is okay. Like we actually have grownups in the room that know what they're doing and have validated the foundation that you've built on the sales and ops side. Yeah. And then on the marketing side, all of a sudden it's like, we have the mental space to really take what we've learned over the last 3-4 years that I've been here and apply it in a way that we weren't able to before because we didn't have the points of distribution we have now. Mm-hmm. We didn't have the resources or the sales numbers that we have now. We didn't have the team to support our dreams the way that we do now. And everything seems so much more achievable as opposed to just like, oh, I have to do 20,000 things and I'm one person or two people.
I want to touch back on something you just said though, because, you know, I remember when I had the brick and mortar and I remember that we opened and about a year and a half later, we started to get a lot of press, just very organic, you know, PR and media mentions and spreads, all basically really much more about like design than they were about food, but that's for another story. And I remember thinking, you know, I wanted this at the beginning, but I'm so glad it didn't come at the beginning because we didn't really know who we were. And I was like, this is a good lesson that I need to keep in my head. Like, you want it immediately, but you really need to wait until it's kind of like wanting to open a lot of doors. Like, you really need to try the region. You really need to try one channel. You really, because you might keep, you kind of keep thinking we know who we are or we've gotten bigger. It's kind of that analogy of like, you think you know what you're playing when you're on sixth grade middle school softball. And then you see like what the game really is and you've been playing nothing. You know, it's kind of like that. And I feel like we thought we were ready for certain things. And then I think part of what's loosening in both of us is like, now we actually really do know who our customer is and we know who we are and we can speak to it in a much clearer way. And it's different depending on the channel and all of that. But I guess I'm curious, like, how did you get there? Like, you who are the leader of this brand, right? Like, what happened in your little journey where now all of a sudden you have this deep understanding? It's probably a bunch of things, but I'd love to hear you try to tease it out.
Oof, that's a good one. I feel like I feel like I know the answer.
Yeah.
Like in my soul, but I've never had to really explain it like in words. I always knew we were going to get there and I knew I needed time. I knew we needed to figure out certain things before we could just like be able to market the hell out of this product and like talk about our who exactly is that target consumer. I also have enough of an understanding of how the business works that a lot of it is really just like throwing things against the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I really hate this expression of like faking it till you make it.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to, I knew that it was all going to come, but we needed to be smart and we needed to test a lot out because we also didn't have a lot of money, you know, a big budget to spend against. And I had never really managed a budget before. And I remember, and it's so funny because now how many years later, I have so much more experience and I still obsessively like write down every little thing that we spend
because
which it has proven to be very helpful.
Yes,
BT Dubs. But like I've kept track of everything that we've done. And I think that's the key is that no matter how little the experiment was, I've kept track of it all. And even today, like our Niche, our head of sales, like she was like, "Hey, Courtney," she asked me a question about Target. And I was like, "Ah, we did something 2.5 years ago." And I was like, "Hey, Maddie," our CRM manager, I was like, "Can you pull me this?" And I pulled that. And I was like, "Here you go, Michelle. Everything's," and I was like, "Oh, wow." Like we've kept a detailed record of how everything has performed, everything that we've done, how much everything cost.
Right.
And through, I think, all of that tracking and experimenting, we've been able to extract a lot of information that I think really just confirmed our hunch. And I think one of the things that I think you and I do really well is that our ears are always open. We always want to learn from other people. And we have a pretty strong gut that comes from experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always known that like a gut, it doesn't just require experience, it requires data. And I knew I had the experience, I just didn't have the data. Mm-hmm. And so I needed to continue to track and gather so that I could prove a lot of these hunches that we've had. And a lot of our hunches have been proven right, and a lot of them have been proven wrong. And from every single one of those experiences, I think we've learned so much about who we are as a brand, who we are as individuals that make up the greater team, and we've been able to finally identify who our consumer is and how they are shopping. And that for me was like a major accomplishment.
Yeah, I mean, it is a major accomplishment considering that I was just interviewed, I think, on the Startup CPG podcast. And, you know, I think you and I don't talk a lot about, you know, that day in, you know, March of 2020 when we had, you know, $200,000 set aside for our global launch at Whole Foods. And all we were going to do is just demo the hell out of this product because that's what worked. And that's how we got the velocity that we got to even go global. And then all of a sudden there were no demos and we were like, huh, so how is anyone in like literally Park City, Sacramento, Houston, Charleston, another stun, like how are they going to know what Haven's Kitchen is? Why is this thing in a, and by the way, who's even going into stores? Like and then that's when we literally just started throwing things at the wall. We tried everything. And this is where your intelligence really came in and made the business, because you are happy to throw things at the wall, but you need to be able to measure them. And you don't necessarily have a dashboard or like a thing, an AI plugin, yada, yada.
One day,
but you keep track. So when we played with digital ads, for example, you were very clear on playing with them in certain demographics at certain stores with social nature, very particular targeted things. Anything, you know, email related, you know, anything that, you know, I would be like, blah, you know, you were like, okay, we'll try it, but we're going to try it this way, you know, because what we need to do is try it and then extract information. And I think that, that talking about social nature for a second, because everyone on here has heard me talk about social nature. And if you haven't heard me interview Analeia, I suggest that.
Oh, such,
you know,
a good episode. She's so wonderful.
She's so great. But I think social nature is a great example. We get calls, I don't know, 10 a week from mm-hmm. brands asking, because they're thinking of it as a digital coupon. And we think of it as a digital coupon plus four
so
or five
other
things, because we're extracting that out of it.
Yeah.
If you only use it as a digital coupon, is it worth it? I don't know.
No, I mean, for very few products, it probably is worth it.
Right.
Alone, just like you're looking at it as like a sampling tool. I remember when I was 11 years old, mm-hmm. I wanted a dog so bad. All I wanted was a puppy. And my mother said, all right, Courtney, if you want a dog, you need to do your research. Mm-hmm. And she took me to the library because at 11
that's
years old,
went, right.
20 something years ago, that's where you went. And I bought books on different types of breeds, and she had parameters. She was like, it needs to be under a certain weight and it needs to be a hypoallergenic because she's allergic to dogs. And I did about 6 months of research before I said, Ma, I think we need to get a Shih Tzu. And we went out, we found a Shih Tzu. And my family got me a dog, and that is, you know, rest in peace. Now she is no longer with us because it was many, many years ago.
Right.
But I think that is, and my mother's going to listen to this podcast and she's going to cry because she's going to be like,
she's the reason why the company is successful.
Yes. Basically Haven's Kitchen is successful because of her.
By the way, the whole podcast about the inflection points and like the macro trends and the team, and it actually has to do with nothing except Courtney's mom. So
Shout out to Debbie.
Let me take a little break and then we'll come right back.
And yes, and we'll talk about how this story ties into experimentation.
I thought it was just about the dog.
Yeah, actually.
All right, we'll be right back.
I'm Chava Perivan, co-host of Agave Road Trip on HRN, here to talk about 818 Tequila. 818 creates their tequila using traditional methods at a family-owned and operated distillery in Jalisco, Mexico. From the blue agave they grow to their recycled glass bottle, 818 emphasizes the earth's importance in all they do. Their distillery runs on biomass and solar power, which means they don't rely as much on fossil fuels and are able to reduce their carbon footprint. Their labels, corks, and boxes are all certified by the Forest Stewardship Council as coming from sustainably managed forests. 818 is a proud member of 1% for the Planet, through which they support HRN as well as Sacred, my organization in Jalisco, where together we transform agave byproducts and water waste into adobe bricks that are donated to local infrastructure projects, like a local library in Zapotitlán de Vadillo. Visit drink818.com to learn more about their sustainability efforts and find 818 near you. 818 has been part of so many magical nights for me, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I do. 818 Tequila, imported by 818 Spirits, Manhasset, New York. 40% alcohol by volume. Drink responsibly.
I'm back with Courtney Becerro, our brand director at Haven's Kitchen. We're just having a little conversation, talking about where we are as a brand, where we are as a team, and of course, Courtney's Shih Tzu.
Yes, my little family Shih Tzu.
So I think what you're going to say is the research became a part of your identity pretty early on.
Pretty early on, like my mother made sure that like I didn't rush into this decision. And granted, you know, you go through your life and you make rushed choices and whatever, but I think fundamentally, it taught me that every major decision that I'm going to make should be based in research. And it doesn't have to, it's not always going to be the right choice, but it should be well thought out. And that is how I approach everything that we've done. And social nature was probably the biggest financial choice that I had made mm-hmm. for the company at that time, because it is, it's not a cheap platform, and they're the first ones to tell you that it's not, you know, it's not chump change, especially for a really small brand.
Right.
So I remember running like the numbers in Excel half a dozen different ways to make sure that I was running it right. And I remember feeling really nervous, but really good about it. Like something, like this was going to be a big thing. And 2 years later, you know, I say this with a lot of confidence. They are not just like an outsourced provider. They have become a, they are part of my marketing strategy.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I look at how our marketing strategy was based in 100% demos as of, you know, February up until February 20 something of, you know, 2020, I could not go back to launching a national demo program. And we can talk about how you and I have, you know, how we should talk about demos all the time. But, you know, my cost per demo and how many units we would move per demo, you know, it's cheaper to go through Social Nature. And on top of that, we're getting all of the email signups and the touch points with the consumer and thousands of reviews. And most importantly, the ability to customize these pre and post-purchase trial surveys, which for me, it's like I've taken like three survey courses just to be able to optimize these. And I run them by other industry friends to make sure that I'm asking the right questions.
Those questions are huge. And I want to just talk about them for a second because the question, so I remember Jake Neller, I talked about him, I think on either my last podcast or someone's last podcast about how they used it at Sweet Nothings too, because basically what they got out of their survey was that they were merchandised next to the healthy, better for you ice cream. And people were disappointed and because it didn't taste like ice cream and it was bumming them out. And then they asked questions about how do you use this and when do you eat it? And overwhelmingly people were like, I use it instead of buying frozen fruit to make my own smoothies. So they took that research, they took that data and they said to their merchandisers who fortunately were in the same category, can you move us away from the healthy ice cream over to the frozen fruit? Because this is how people are using our product. And they saw their velocities multiply.
That's amazing.
It's just a beautiful example, right? Mm-hmm. So in our case, it's what else is in your basket? And meat and fish are number one.
Yeah. So and I would even say like, you hear me talk about like messaging, like tofu messaging versus mofu messaging.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the tofu and the mofu.
Yeah. And a lot of that stems from what we've learned through those Social Nature surveys.
Yeah, I mean, going to tofu for a second. So that's top of the funnel. Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget the funnel that you drew on our whiteboard, which was awesome. But, you know, Miguel Leal said to us pretty early on, you know, I think in his first podcast, he said the same thing. He was like, emerging brands have either a stronger business and a weaker brand, or a stronger brand and a business that needs to catch up to the brand. And he was like, you have a brand. You don't need to do more brand building. You don't need to do more awareness right now. You need to build out your ACV. You need to build out the number of doors you're in. And I think that A, it's more fun. B, it's where I think founders like me are probably paying attention more, right? But there is a overemphasis on awareness. An overemphasis on top of the funnel, content that leads to nothing. And there is something to be said for, I still am a believer that people need to see these pouches in various places. Your point has always been, if they see the pouches and they want to go buy the pouches and they go to a store and it's not there, they're going to be annoyed. So let's not do that too quickly. And let's make sure that where we are putting these pouches in front of people, going back to those targeted stuff, they actually have a call to action. And in our case, because they can't I mean, they can buy us online, but A, we don't really want them to, and B, it's clunky. You know, how do we make sure that where we're building awareness, we're also building the ability for them to buy us at a store? And that's always been sort of, for us, that plan. It was never just about building awareness, you know? And I see that coming to fruition, especially as brands are struggling now with direct-to-consumer sales. They've built a lot of awareness, but they don't have the wholesale infrastructure to support it. So talk to me a little bit about, just in your brain, redrawing that funnel. You know, the top of the funnel, the middle of the funnel, the bottom of the funnel, where we're emphasizing our efforts right now, how we're putting things in different parts of that, you know, just a rough draft of your brain a little
bit. Yeah, so I think right now, as our new sales team really gears up to significantly increase those points of distribution, right? The top of our funnel is really people who are kind of just looking at us on the shelf.
Right.
So one of the things that we've learned through Social Nature is that the majority of the people, when they first try us, they're squeezing us on top of whatever they're making, right? Whether that's meat or vegetables or seafood, whether they're a vegetarian or whatever their dietary restrictions are, they're squeezing us on top.
So in your funnel, this is people who have bought the sauce.
So this is people who are looking at us on the shelf.
Okay. Because I'm thinking, is there also that top of the funnel being like people who see us on a TikTok?
No, I'm talking, I right now I'm thinking, because we could talk about people top of the funnel who are looking at us from TikTok. That journey mm-hmm. is a little bit more nuanced, mm-hmm. but I'm talking about like when you're going through the grocery store,
right,
and that person is browsing and they've never heard of us before. Maybe they've seen us on TikTok. Maybe they've seen us on Instagram, but they're browsing and they come across our category and they right. see Haven's Kitchen sauces, right? And one of the things that we've realized is that this person who hasn't necessarily bought us before, they are squeezing us on top. So when you see a shelf dangler or a shelf talker or a dangler, if you see a secondary placement, you know,
a dangler, yeah.
A whole nother conversation on danglers versus shelf talkers. That's a whole another episode.
Stay tuned for next week where we deep dive into the difference between danglers and there was another word, wasn't there? Like a wiggler or something.
A wobbler.
Yep.
A wobbler. Yeah, wobbler is a dangler. Yeah.
Okay. They're interchangeable.
You just lost 10% of your subscribers. Sorry, Allie.
Sorry, guys.
But you know, when they see us and they scan that QR code or when they see us on that TikTok, what we've realized is that what's going to resonate with them most is if they see us squeezing sauce right on top of whatever it is that they're cooking. Mm-hmm. And then once they've, okay, oh, I get it. I get how to use the sauce. Because, and I talk about this a lot, we have a lot of different things that we have to educate people on.
Yeah.
A pouch instead of a jar, refrigerated instead of shelf stable, Romesco
instead
of Romesco? Kitchen.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. you couldn't start a cracker company. You wanted to start a complex sauce company. And here we are. So we have a lot of things that we're educating, right? Now I'm going to teach them how to cook on the shelf. Now I'm going to teach them, like, it's right. just one more thing. But it's so much easier to be like, just squeeze this on top of whatever you're making instead of being like, oh, use me as a dressing, marinade this, and that, and mm-hmm. toss me with this and throw me that. You can also use me with it. You know, we're forcing them to burn a lot of mental calories. Yep. So squeeze it right on top. And then once they have that pouch at home and they scan that QR code again and they've tried it on top, now it's like, oh, Haven's Kitchen also teaches me how to roast vegetables. And I can also learn how to not undercook my chicken and poison my family.
It's so interesting, right? Because with YouTube, it's almost
it's
like
the
these
other
things,
way around.
Yeah, completely the other way around. It's so fun.
Mm-hmm. So exactly.
So just so people know what the hell we're talking about. So we talk about, you know, I think one of the things that I'm proud of us for. And, you know, hopefully I won't get in trouble for this, is, you know, we've never seen ourselves, to use your expression, as the hero of the journey, right? The home cook is the champion of the story. They're Luke, we're Yoda, right? Like, they're Dorothy, we're the whatever witch Glinda. Saying, just click your heels, Glinda. And that can be tough when you're in a zeitgeist of brands that are very strong on the founder story, very strong on the behind the scenes. There's lots of Instagram, you know, almost like reality television shows at this point about the building of brands. That's not who we are. That's not how we've built this. And what's interesting is, like, going into different channels, thinking people aren't necessarily searching YouTube for how do I use Haven's Kitchen chimichurri. That is, we just automatically know that, but they are looking for how do I not kill my family with undercooked chicken. And if we can capitalize on some of that and then bring them into the brand, but we're not bringing them into the brand to hold them in there. Like, that's what I think is kind of interesting. It's like this, you know,
when we look at platforms like YouTube, which is totally different than what I just explained, when somebody is seeing us on the shelf, mm-hmm. we look at something like YouTube, like you said, people are searching for a solution to a problem that they have. And those, if we're able to fulfill that solution, if we're able to push a, you know, my team hears me talk a lot about transitional CTAs, which—
What does that mean?
It's basically like a call to action, but that isn't pushing your product. Mm-hmm. So you see it a lot on LinkedIn through software companies do a really great job at that, where it's like, download this, 5 ways to optimize your website experience. And then you click in and it's the 5 tips, but they're selling you a, I don't know, a mm-hmm. operational management order processing, da, 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 da. Right. You know, like, it's a super complex thing, but they made it super simple for you to click in and digest mm-hmm. this information. All of a sudden you're like, oh, those 5 tips to optimize my website speed was actually really helpful.
Right.
Let me, you know, click in and see how I can, you know,
I think you are further. The queen of the transitional CTA.
Because I drill it so much into the team, because—
But it also goes back to that thing originally that we were talking about, which is like, because almost we couldn't drive people to buy from us because it mm-hmm. didn't make any sense economically. Yeah. So we were like, so why, what are we driving them to? We know we need to bring them in.
Mm-hmm.
We need to connect.
You build the trust in a way that resonates with their lives. You know, right. Like, you are fascinating, but at the end of the day, the founder story isn't going to make their lives better or worse. You know,
right.
Like, it's cool to see how a brand operates, but at the end of the day, the consumer, human beings have so much to worry about, to just basic survival.
Yeah.
You know, they need to know that every interaction they have, like, our brains in just naturally for survival is built like that, to scan everything. And it's like, how does this benefit me to just stay alive? Mm-hmm. And so that is what a transitional CTA is. And on YouTube, that is our strategy. That is the top of funnel.
Right.
For getting them into our world. Whereas on the shelf, it's completely opposite. So that's why, like, our funnel, when I had to draw it out that day, because it's pretty complex depending on where people are coming to us from. And I would imagine that we're not the only brand that that struggles with that. So I think, again, it can be complex, but I think it's really important to figure it out. Because yeah. then it makes it that much easier to solve that consumer's problem.
Well, I think it also speaks to, you know, the word omnichannel has been now, I think, overused, and it's been around for, you know, 4 or 5 years. But if brands are supposed to be in store, on e-com, have our own D2C, on Amazon, in club, right? Like, if we're supposed to be in all the sales channels, and we're also supposed to be on Pinterest, on YouTube, on TikTok, on Instagram, have an email, do an SMS, right? Like, if we're supposed to be in every channel, both sales and marketing, which is mm-hmm. essentially what omnichannel means, right? There has to be choices that we make, A, but there also has to be some connectivity among all of it. And that, I think that's what ultimately you've done is you've created, not to sound like such a like wiener right now, but like a synergy between what we're doing online, what we're doing digitally, what we're doing in all these like marketing channels and social channels, and what we're doing in store. And that's really hard. And yeah. I don't know that many brands that are doing that very well, right? Like, they're building something out here and they're hoping that when someone gets to the store, they recognize that brand from that fun Instagram account that they follow or that they saw a TikTok of. But what you're trying to do is like latch those two things together. And I mean, I think bringing Ashley into that yes. is a big part of it.
Yes. 100 like
but talk every, about her a little bit. Yeah.
Every person on the marketing team has really it's I mean honestly at this point I don't know how we would function without anybody here.
Yeah.
But Ashley has been a really fantastic add to the team.
So Ashley leads the content.
Yes.
Right, which means that basically everything that everyone sees on any of the channels Ashley touches in some form or another.
Yeah. Exactly. Like I'm over here like building strategy and keeping kind of like your vision on task. I am not building, I'm not creating TikToks because Lord knows we would fail. So she's really identifying like what is visually on brand. She's creating that. She's making sure that like everything looks beautiful from email to video content across all platforms. But basically, she has been a fantastic addition to the team, allowing me to not worry about like our Instagram followers mm-hmm. and are we doing TikTok right? She is in those channels. She's keeping a pulse on like what is trending? How is content being distributed? Like one recipe that we create this week. It will not appear the same way on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, on our YouTube channel. It is going to come across with a different tone and a different mm-hmm. vibe. And the copy is different because we understand that people live on their social platforms and sometimes there is an overlap, but for the most part, like I am, you know, they're going to be different.
Yeah.
So she does a really great job at communicating to those people very differently in the languages that they speak.
And I think also to the point from before is they are also, our marketing team is drilled into sales.
Yes.
It's all about velocity. It's all about, we are launching this new account. How do we get straight over that 2.5-3 units per SKU per store per week almost immediately? What do we need to do and how do we support sales?
Yep. That is one of the things I think we've done really well is making sure that everybody understands how every single person impacts sales, impacts
yeah.
velocity. It is important, I think, for everybody to really understand where they kind of fall within that and how they impact it. And they're always thinking about that. And if there's ever a moment where it feels like they're not, somebody's there to kind of, we're always there to remind each other.
Right.
Because it's really easy, especially for marketing, to kind of get like, oh my God, this is really cute. This is trending. This is fun. This is, mm-hmm. you know, this looks great. Okay, but what are we trying right. to accomplish here?
And that goes back to, I think, you know, sitting in a room, you know, at the end of last year and saying, okay, we want to get to fill in the blank in sales next year. Let's assume 30% of that is new doors because we don't want to be getting there just with, you know, adding on doors, because it's the most expensive possible way to grow, A, and B, like we talked about at the beginning, it's not that easy to do. So that means that the doors that we're in, we need to go from being cracked open to being kicked wide open. So if we're doing, you know, 4 units per SKU per store per week in February, how do we make sure that we're 8 by the end of the year? And that's partly a question of the content that we're doing and the emails and every, like you just said, every single thing, every channel that we're in, pushing people to go buy in store, not from us. But I think there's also, you've also redirected yourself a little bit. And I think we've collectively felt like, okay, we might need to go back a little bit to shopper marketing 101. So talk about that for a couple minutes.
I'm not going to lie. Shopper marketing is not my favorite channel, pillar of marketing, if I'm being totally honest.
How would you, and tell me, like, how would you define shopper marketing? Because you actually have the grocery background and I think of it as like this big umbrella, but I might be wrong.
I mean, when I was working on the retailer side of thing of the business, for me, shopper marketing was like anything a brand paid for marketing. So if you wanted like a home page banner, or you wanted like a recipe highlight on a homepage, or you wanted to be in a circular and you paid X amount of money to get that visibility, that's shopper marketing. I think,
or a sticky coupon on a pouch.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that could also be shopper marketing, I think, for some people. I think on the brand side of things, I have learned that shopper marketing is a lot more, and maybe it's just like on the brand, there's a lot more, you can do, like those sticky coupons, like merchandising, like the wobbler danglers and shelf talkers and clip strips and acrylic shelves, sponsored search, like all of these things, any marketing that you do to support retail sales.
Right. That's, yeah, I like over that. Here,
like at Haven's Kitchen, we consider that shopper marketing. Right. I joke around that it's like a gritty, it's the gritty side of marketing, because I find myself just like on the phone angry all the time with somebody.
It's not the vision. It's like it's boots on the ground.
Yes. It's not brand marketing. You know, it's not like the essence of the brand and like Haven's Kitchen, we're here to make your lives easy. It's like, I need to get secondary placements. I need this. I need to get you these coupons. My coupons are off kilter. The edges aren't correct. You sent me shelf talkers, not danglers. Stop mansplaining me. Like there is like a whole level of grittiness in shopper marketing.
By the way, I love shopper marketing Courtney.
Shopper marketing Courtney is a little like angry.
Is she short me? So we joke because like when Courtney plays golf, she gets into like her little golf outfit and we call her Sportney. Yeah. And when Courtney's in California, we call her Courtney with a K. But I think Shortney is actually really good for shopper marketing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm also 4'10". So
yeah. Well, we'll talk about how you feel about that. Yeah. Okay, so for the last couple minutes, I want to talk about, you know, we touched on it a little bit, but I want to talk about these user guides. And I want to talk about us. Let's talk about us. Is that a song or did I just make that up?
I think you may have applied that to another song. But
okay, amazing. So that is the second podcast where I've broken into song. Oh my gosh, Haven's Kitchen the Musical. Definitely has a number that's like where let's talk about us-ing. So I don't know that I've ever just had the opportunity to just like look at you and publicly also just like, thank you. You have become, I mean, for better, or for worse, like one of the most important people in my life. I feel like we're on a whole different level than just, you know, founder and brand director. I think most importantly is we trust each other very deeply. So when we go back to the demo discussion, I'm able to say, I have this sneaking suspicion that there needs to be more human beings talking to these shoppers in the stores. I know it's probably not the most cost effective. I know that we can get more data out of social nature. I know I'll get yelled at by like some grandmother who like likes her chimichurri more. And there's this part of me that's like compelled. And what you then do is you break it down and you say, okay, I understand that this is the nugget of what you're trying to get to. I'm not going to dismiss it because I trust you. And I know that there you have a spidey sense about something. So now instead of like, no, we're not going to do that, let's just figure out the best way to scratch that itch that you're having. And sometimes if it just comes from someone that makes me feel FOMO-y, like so-and-so did all these demos and they were amazing, then you're also able to get to that. And on the flip side, I also feel like once I get it off my chest and you give me sort of your rationale behind it, I trust you. How do you account for that? Like, is it, how did we build that trust? Why do you think that we've gone through shit? We've wrestled things out. Mm-hmm. We've had awkward, uncomfortable moments, like, yeah. And yet we keep coming out stronger and better.
I think we're both very similar in how we communicate. And we went through a lot together with the pandemic. I mm-hmm. think when you had to close down the school, mm-hmm. Even though I wasn't part of the brick and mortar, I felt like we went through that loss together in a sense, mm-hmm. like Maddie kind of went through that with us, mm-hmm. At the same time. So we were all kind of like bonded by this trauma, I think, mm-hmm. but also, I think we earned each other's trust.
Yeah.
And I think we spent a lot of time talking about our fundamental beliefs of how we approach things that we didn't have the opportunity to do when the brick and mortar existed. Like we really only got to the root of that through virtual meetings when we didn't see each other for like a year, right. Pretty much.
Well, sorry to interrupt you, but no, like, because for founders listening to this, like I don't know exactly what I did to earn your trust. I think I'm open to feedback. Like we said, you know, we have these user guides. I know that I can be annoying. I know that I get, you know, twirly, as we all like to say, when I talk to someone who makes me feel insecure, and that I got to be careful not to pass that on to you. But speak to the founders and tell them how to earn the trust of the people that are actually building this company for them.
You listen to me. You listened to me and you gave me the space to make good choices and to make mistakes. And I remember having this conversation with my dad when you would get a little twirly. My father is a founder of mm-hmm. his own business. And I remember being like, Allie's feeling this sort of way. I can't get across to her. Like I don't know what to do. And he would always remind me, you are there as an expert. She hired you because you know more than she does in this area. And you mm-hmm. just need to continue to prove that. And you need to support her and you need to show her.
We're very fragile.
Well, my father is probably the more fragile of the founders that I know. But, you know, he reminded me that,
your mother's
like, yes,
really going to love this episode.
Yeah. But, you know, he reminded me that, like, we both needed to work at it. Mm-hmm. And I remember asking you the questions. And I've learned now, okay, when you brought up demos for the fifth time in the mm-hmm. third week and my eye twitches every single fucking time you mention the demo, Allie, I have learned learn to be like, hey, Al, can we chat about what expectations about demos are? Like, right. I have learned to just be like really upfront with you because yeah. you're like, oh, okay, yeah. And then you're like, oh, I mean, I'm just shooting you this article because I thought it was interesting. But like, right. I know that, and we sat down and we talk about like, okay, what are your expectations? How are you feeling about this? This is why I think we shouldn't do demos right now. And it has, we have a proven track record that we can trust each other.
Yeah.
One of the things my father also said was, Allie will realize that once she lets you do your own thing and go, that is when you are going to really blossom. Mm-hmm. And I remember like us going through these tough conversations and having these uncomfortable moments. And I remember just being like, Allie, trust me. Mm-hmm. Like, this is what the data shows. This is what the,
right.
I remember the lamb chop image. Every time you saw it, you hated that image. And I was like, Allie, look at the numbers. Right. And, you know, we've gotten to that point. But I would say to the founders and to their heads of departments,
mm-hmm. yeah,
both put the time in. Because it is like any relationship. It is like a friendship. It is like a marriage. It is any long-term relationship. It requires work on both parties. And at the end of the day, you know that you hired me for a reason and you trust me and vice versa.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like
I chose to come here because I trust you. And right. so, you know, we owe it to each other.
Yeah. And I mean, I think, you know, what happens sometimes is, you know, the scope changes almost, the alignment changes, right? Like, mm-hmm. and you and I have always been really straight with each other. You know, I'm going to give you lots of time. You're going to give me lots of time. I think at this point we're fully over that. Like, we know that we're in it for the long haul because there's literally no one who could do this better than you, honestly.
Oh, thank you.
It's true.
And I know a lot of founders that are tough, man. You're great.
Thanks. So that's the Mutual Admiration Society. The user guides are, you know, we have less than a minute left, but the user guides are, for everyone who's wondering, basically everyone on the team has to do a little bit of soul searching, right? Like, things that I might do that might annoy you. Things that you might do that might annoy me, how I prefer to communicate. It's been really interesting for us to bring in a sales team that communicates completely differently than we do. That's been really interesting to process and get through. And I think we've done a really good job, you know, weed whacking that too. You know, what to do when there is a problem. You know, some people get quiet, some people like to talk. So DM me, on LinkedIn, I guess is the best place if you want a copy of my user guide, because I am sharing it and you'll probably recognize some themes, either in yourself or in the ENFJ that you happen to work with. Court, anything else you want to leave part with?
I am just always so grateful for your leadership and how seriously and like your the way that you lead, I think, is very compassionate and understanding and generous, but also, you know, a little scary when you get mad, which is great. and
you like
it's
it.
Just,
you like it when I have to take prednisone.
Yeah. Allie on Roy's is my favorite.
I also want to say that what I think I appreciate the most about you is that people like me, we put ourselves out and then we're constantly looking around for, did that go over well? Does someone hate us? Does everyone love us? Who hates us? Who likes us? What's going on? Did that fall flat? Was that funny? Was that not funny? Was that too harsh? It's almost, it's a big weight, right? And it's something that obviously, like, those of us who are working on it are working on it, but it's also probably there to stay. And in all of your time with me, you will say no and you will push back and you'll say, here's why I don't think that's a good idea. But you've never ever made me feel like I'm flighty or, you know, silly or, you know, not connected to reality. You've never made me feel stupid. You know, you know what I mean? No, but you haven't. You've never made me feel like foundry. You know what I mean? You've always made me feel like you fundamentally respect where I'm coming from, even if you disagree with the tactic. And that I'm really grateful for.
Well, that's because that's what it is. It's a tactic, but the strategy remains the same. And the tactics will change.
Yeah.
And that's okay. And we're allowed to change our minds and we're allowed to, you know, evolve. But I also revisit your user guide every so often. And I recommend anytime someone is going to talk to you about anything, I'm like, read her user guide beforehand. Yeah. It's really helpful.
Right there.
It's all right there.
Yeah. I was like, I'm nothing if, you know, not self-aware, probably not doing enough to work on these actual things that I might do that might annoy you, but you know,
We're all working on a lot. Okay. Exactly. We can't work on everything all at the same time.
Exactly.
But this was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for coming on. You're hosting in a couple weeks.
I am.
Yeah. Everyone who's out there listening and all of you, I think a lot of you are actually buying the sauce too, which I never really thought about, but appreciate the business and appreciate the listening and all the feedback. And I will be back next week with another episode of In the Sauce. In the Sauce is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.